Welcome back to Corporate Rehab. Hi, Nami.
Hey, Michael.
I like how we start all of these off the exact same one.
Hey, Michael.
Maybe someday, like, we'll have music. I don't know. So we are going to talk about... So just to preface this, we think this is probably going to end up being two episodes. Nami definitely has a lot to say. I think I probably have a little bit less to say, but it's more the subject matter. But I will gladly let Nami talk as long as she wants or needs to. We're going to talk about DEI or D&I, DI. I don't know all of the different terms that people use. But we're going to be talking about DEI. And we're looking specifically at a builtin.com article that states that groups that were formerly seen as quote-unquote minorities may reach majority status by 2024. So 48% of Gen Z, which we know are basically the new millennials, it's the generation everyone's loving to hate on right now, but Generation Z, Gen Z are the most, 48% of them are racial or ethnic minorities, which in the U.S. is actually a really... huge deal. Diverse companies enjoy 2.3 times higher cash flow per employee, which I think is, again, huge.
Yeah. And I mean, to make a case for this, diverse management has been shown to increase revenue by 19%. Diverse management has been shown to increase revenue by 19%. And gender diverse companies are 15% more likely to beat industry median financial returns. More than 3 out of 4 workers prefer diverse companies. And I think the answer question here is, though, why are companies so bad at it?
They are really bad at it. And as we were preparing for this episode, I was actually trying to find companies that were sort of named as particularly good at it. And I didn't find any conglomerates. There were very few, like Fortune 500, Fortune 100s, that were named as being good.
Mm-hmm.
I find that most of the companies that tend to be good at it are very small, like less than 10 person companies that still have like a bigger financial impact. Forbes.com has actually released 2 articles on this. From top 4 reasons diversity and inclusion programs fail, these are the 4 reasons that they name. So the first being there's no long-range plan. Leaders have to integrate the values of diverse and inclusive culture within organizational objectives. And what I really think this is saying to me is we use DEI or D&I as a response. We're not being proactive about it. It's not an earnest effort in a lot of cases. It's something happened, either an internal incident, or I think what we saw in the summer of 2020 was this huge sort of re-revolution of racial inequality. And so we saw a lot of companies responding to that very quickly, but there was not an actual like long-range plan. And these were not just like part of the organizational objective, they were a completely separate entity. The second thing being there's a lack of commitment to the program. So leaders themselves really have to model these DEI principles. The third being it's a poor instructional delivery model. So that really just overall leads to a program failure. And then there's also just a lack of representation. So everyone has to be able to have a seat at the table.
Yeah, and I think more than just having a seat, because it's not just about putting together a United Colors of Benetton ad, right? It is that everyone has an opinion, can contribute their opinion, and they feel safe to do so.
Yeah.
So I think that's the inclusion part of it, right?
Absolutely.
It is not just about diversity, but the inclusion part of how all this comes together. And there was a second Forbes article titled 5 Reasons Why Diversity Programs Fail. So the first reason was resistance. And this can be for many reasons. Employees not feeling like change can be made. Employees feeling victimized or feeling singled out as a member of diverse group. And I think even when the company that we were at started putting together this DEI effort, mainly because in response to what was happening at the time, it was, you know, Black Lives Matter. It happened. Yeah. And really, the company had nothing to say about it, right? And it became this, what does corporate communication say? What is our stance on this? Do we have a stance on this? Yeah. Are we supposed to have a stance on this, right? What are our competitors doing, right? And it's like, really? Like, is this how we feel about diversity, equity, and inclusion? And then there were people who didn't really want to join because if it hasn't been a priority before, why does it suddenly become a priority now? And then you also don't want to get singled out, right? And then improper implementation. So simply having a program doesn't mean that it will be successful. These programs need to be aimed at changing behaviors. And there is this saying in Korea where a habit formed at the age of 3 goes until 80, right? Okay. And so I say that because changing behaviors, it doesn't happen overnight, right? It essentially what they're saying is like your habit from 3-year-old when you're 3 years old is going to go until you're 80, right?
Needs to be instilled early.
Exactly. Yeah. And, you know, it has to be repetitive, right? For you to be able to change behaviors. And programs also don't have to be classroom style or workshops conducted by HR. And they can include mentorship and sponsorship programs. And then there is lack of consistency. So DEI programs are often something done in reaction, you know, as we clearly saw from what happened. And if the first time that DEI becomes a focus after an incident, it feels very inauthentic, which I would agree, right?
Yes.
When this happened, right? And in our particular industry, a lot of brands started saying, yes, we stand with, you know, Black Lives Matter, APIA hate. And people started like weighing in on these brand social going, okay.
Well, to give a little bit more context to that, we were working in an industry that was not doing a great job as a whole. The entire industry was pretty far behind.
Yes.
What I will say is, as an industry, we got together very quickly and really started to implement some changes. Now, not to say that the industry is perfect and you know, there are not still things that were talked about that have not been done or whatever, but to be late in an industry that was already late was is like especially, I think, horrifying.
Yeah.
And I think that was sort of the, to what you were talking about, like the position we were finding ourselves in a little bit. It's like we were so caught up in what other companies were doing that we were not assessing like what that meant for us or to us or whatever.
Right. And you keep saying the industry, the beauty industry, right? Like you know, I think... And I think it's interesting because beauty is so much, beauty has just changed so much, right?
Yeah.
In terms of how to define beauty, so on and so forth. And a lot of that just has to do with identity and how, you know, people indulge in beauty to make themselves feel good. And, you know, we'll get more into that later, but I think that beauty especially has a huge role to play when it comes to DEI. And then lack of leadership buy-in. It was cited as one of the most common challenges when introducing DEI programs. This can be because leaders are resistant, believe that change is impossible, or just, you know, they don't care, right?
Yeah.
And I can also attest to when Black Lives Matter was happening, you know, we work for a global company.
Yeah.
So we have teams that are not located in North America. And people just, they don't see it as much of an issue overseas, you know, may not. And that's a general blanket statement.
Yeah. Well, my understanding, because we kind of learned this like that summer, was that you're, and please, anyway, we don't have a lot of European listeners, but our understanding was European diversity tends to be the amount of countries represented, not so much. They're not as like... And this might be a little bit different now, but at the time, that was really like they kept sort of heroing like the amount of countries that we had. And we're like, that's great. But like, that's not exactly what we are talking about in the US, because we are essentially 50 different countries mm-hmm. that make up one big country. Like, mm-hmm. you know, we're 50 different states that have mm-hmm. very unique cultural makeup and backgrounds and all of that that kind of make up this one big homogenous state.
Mm-hmm.
So our diversity needs and all of that were really, really different mm-hmm. than like especially what was going on in Europe, but even some of the East Asian countries.
Mm-hmm.
It just took us a little bit to like get everyone sort of on board with like what that meant.
Right.
Given that a lot of these brands were American in voice or American in conception or whatever, mm-hmm. that we really needed that to like come like rise to the surface.
Yeah. And I remember having a specific conversation regarding diversity. And I remember telling one of my European counterparts, I want to see less flags and different skin tones.
Yeah.
You know? And I mean, that doesn't really summarize what diversity and inclusion means either, right? But I was like, let's start
it
there.
It was the starting
yeah,
point.
Yeah. I was
though,
like,
yeah.
let's start there. And then, you know, drop the diversity label. This article cites a study found that white men exhibit more stress and anticipate anti-white discrimination for a company that was pro-diversity. A creative label may help people understand what the program's outcome is aimed to be. On that same note, DEI programs should be ever-changing and ever-evolving. What worked in 2000 may be outdated and ineffective today.
Possibly.
Yes.
So Harvard Business Review also released an article on this called Are Your Company's D&I Efforts Shallow? And this article posed six different questions. Does the business strategy clearly articulate why diversity and inclusion is vital to its execution? I have never seen that. Do the spoken and unspoken norms and practices of the organization adequately support inclusive behavior? Again, I think on the surface, but not so much, you know, in practice. Are workers at all levels held accountable for demonstrating decency and respect in all interactions with colleagues, clients, customers, vendors, etc., without exception? I think we know from last week where we were working that was not happening. Do all employees understand the impact of the words they use and behaviors they display to their colleagues? Does the organization have a mandatory development program for all employees to build and deepen their inclusive skills? And lastly, does the organization use objective skill data to identify high potentials, deploy talent, improve performance, and facilitate career progression, rather than relying on subjective assessments that have bias embedded in them? So we're going to take a quick break, and then Nami and I are going to come right back, and we're going to talk more about this. Okay, so before we jump into this, Nami, we are both considered, you know, members of diverse groups. So you are an Asian woman, I am a queer man, but I, at the end of the day, am still white. So I definitely don't really, you know, I probably won't say as much, but Nami, let's go ahead and just start talking about this.
Yeah, and I think that's like the white men's guilt, right? Where we specifically also talked about an article where the study found that white men exhibit more stress.
Right? Okay, that's not why I'm not talking.
Yes. But I just want to be clear, you know, of the racism that I've, you know, experienced in my lifetime, it was definitely not all from white men, right? Some of them were.
Very no. little was from Michael.
Zero from Michael. And so I just want to put it out there. And I also want to put it out there that my alter ego may come up. So my coworker slash friend actually gave me this name because he said, you know, you're even keeled and then the sassiness and spiciness comes out and we just need a different name for her. And I said, okay. And he said, you know what? How about Soul Kim? Like S-E-O-U-L, right? Kim.
Oh.
Right. And I was like, huh, okay. I can get down with that. So You know, he would always say, is Soul Kim coming out? I'm like, yes, it's going to come out in a bit. And so...
Well, let's actually start there.
Okay.
Because we have talked about the... Again, I feel like this is just really us repeating things we've already talked about. But I think it's really interesting because you and I mm-hmm. would have conversations about race mm-hmm. pretty frequently. Sometimes they were humorous and we would kind of joke about things. But what is really interesting is I do find, and I didn't really draw this connection until just now, but that I think it was Forbes talked about, you know, white men get stressed out. Mm-hmm. They think this is going to be anti-white, whatever, mm-hmm. which I think some of that is dumb. But white people in general are really scared to talk about race. They don't want to acknowledge it. Mm-hmm. They don't want to see it. And I don't mean that necessarily in a negative way. It's well-intentioned mm-hmm. in that like, oh, I don't see color or I mm-hmm. don't notice race. And it's like, well, that's a lie mm-hmm. because you have to notice those things if you have eyes. Mm-hmm. I guess if you don't physically don't see, sure, maybe that's less of a thing, but it's not a problem like to acknowledge race, talk about race. But I would notice that sometimes you and I would be like laughing about things or whatever, and it would make some other people really uncomfortable. Or if I had any conversation about race with like that was just between me and another white person, mm-hmm. they really tend to shut down very mm-hmm. quickly. And, you know, to be clear, I was never saying anything disparaging. I wasn't making racist jokes.
Right.
It was just, I'm in an interracial relationship. Mm-hmm. I can't ignore, you know, race, and it's intercultural as well. So mm-hmm. like, you know, my husband did not grow up in the US. Mm-hmm. So it is, a lot of my time is spent teaching him things and explaining things to him that are not just inherent because he came over here in his 20s.
Right.
So I say all of that to say, you and I are very comfortable talking about race.
Yes.
We don't take race super seriously mm-hmm. Because it is just sort of a fact of life. Like, people are different races. Mm-hmm. It's not a big deal. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we talked a little bit earlier about our company getting so caught up in, like, what to say mm-hmm. about George Floyd. And then when Stop AAPI Hate, you know, came around a little while later, I remember like talking to people and feeling so crazy because literally all they had to say was like, racism is bad. Mm-hmm. But that seemed like such a controversial statement to them. Mm-hmm. And I remember talking to people and just being like, I just feel crazy because saying being racist is bad or racism is bad is not a controversial statement. If we can't agree on that as a society, then yeah, I guess that's why people have trouble like seeing color, seeing race.
But yeah, and I mean, racism is bad, no shit, right? When this was all happening, and I guess when Black Lives Matter was really at the forefront, that movement was just taking the country by storm. I was actually in a meeting with leaders because, again, everyone was waiting for, you know, corporate communications, yeah. What is our stance? And I actually spoke up because I just could not believe that we were having this meeting. And I said, if we cannot say that racism is bad as a company without getting, you know, however many approvals, I said, I don't know if this is the company that I want to work for. And I actually said that during a meeting. I said, right? Which is really obvious, right?
It is, but to your point, so I was never a part of those meetings. Mm-hmm. I obviously, we had very different roles in that regard. And I think, again, given my relationship with DEI, mm-hmm. I was not someone being sought out mm-hmm. to give my opinion, which was fine. I was trying not to give my opinion a lot at the time. And so I think that, though, is what was so apparent mm-hmm. is even not being a part of those conversations, we knew that this was a struggle mm-hmm. and no one could figure out why it was such a struggle.
Yeah.
Why it felt so controversial for the leaders to just say, literally racism is bad. Mm-hmm. And that just felt like something that they wanted to like focus group. And I don't know if they, but that's what it felt like, is they were like, well, we need to like test the waters here and see what this is actually going to do to us. When it's like, if so much of your business is coming from racists, there's a bigger problem here. Like, we really need to evaluate how we're marketing these products, that this is who we're attracting.
Right. and I actually have a funny story about, you know, when you were talking about some people say, I don't see color, which I've heard too. And that is absolute bullshit.
Yeah.
You know, if you just met me, one of the top 10 characteristics, if you had to describe me to the police, it would be that I'm Asian in one of those characteristics,
right?
Do you
know who Ziwei is? She's a comedian. She does satire. Mm-hmm. I feel like I've said, she's very, very funny. Look her up. I will send you some videos. But she has a TV show on Showtime now just called Ziwei. It's very funny. But a lot of what she does is like racial satire. Mm-hmm. And so one of the things she'll do is say like, I just attacked you in the street. How are you going to describe me? And almost always she's interviewing a white person and they will do anything not to say that she's black. But the second they say black, she just, and she's like, why are you saying that? Why are you calling me black? And like, it is the funniest thing. And I'm not saying I would react any differently. I would be just as uncomfortable in those types of situations. But it is that notion of, it's, if I am trying to like, let's say if you were picking something up for me and I couldn't make it downstairs and I had to send my husband, one of the first things I would say is like, he's going to be a Chinese dude wearing, you know, this hoodie, these pants.
Yes.
Like it's a huge identifier. Maybe not so much in California. There's a lot of Chinese dudes walking around, but, it's that like, it's not hidden. To pretend that it's hidden, I think is really what becomes a bigger issue, because then I think and I don't want to speak for you obviously, but it becomes erasing a part of you because you are Asian.
Yes.
And the people that I know who are quote unquote racial minorities, it's a big part of them because of how the world has treated them and things that they've had to overcome, but also just because that's just who they are.
Yes.
Like there's nothing wrong with like being happy with who you are or acknowledging that. And I think it does end up being a lot of like, well, white people are like trying to take that.
Mm-hmm.
And again, it's well-intended. I recognize that, but it is still not the right way to go about it.
Right. And I think that's where, you know, I think this whole conversation about, you know, having DEI within organizations and, you know, just forming this now, I'm of the party where this education needs to start much younger because, again, you know, you're trying to change people's behaviors. And I'm actually going to take you on a little time machine back to when I moved, right, from Korea to Syracuse. Because again, you know, the whole thing of, I have a hard time believing that all the racist encounters that I had with people, that all of them, 100% of them, you know, once they started working, that all disappeared, right?
Yeah. No, for sure.
And so one thing about like, I don't see color. So, and this was definitely not out of like, the intent was not malicious. But I remember my freshman year, girls from my dorm said, you know, let's go out to the bars. And I said, I don't have a fake ID. And she said, oh, I have a fake ID you can use. And so she pulled out a fake ID. It was of a white girl. And I looked at her. I looked at the ID. I looked at her again. And I said, this girl's white. She said, no, you look more like her than my other friend who is white. And I'm like,
but did you?
No.
I was just curious.
I'm like, if I showed a white girl ID to the bouncer, like there, you know? And so I was like, okay, I get where you're coming
from.
So
she's not like, she wasn't like Michelle Branch white girl.
No. Okay. So like, I think like she was blonde. I don't remember. It was just so, well, it was, my hair was not dyed at that point. So it was just so far from, you know, what I looked like, that I just kind of looked at her and just like, girl, I'm not going out to the bars tonight, you know? And then there was another incident where, you know, this girl, she was like, hey, you know, do you know how to do nails? Can you do my nails for me? I think where she grew up, where she used to get her nails done, it was always the Asians. And so I think for, you know, she probably didn't even know the different ethnicities of Asians, right?
Right.
And so, and I, at the time, because again, this was when I just moved from Korea to Syracuse, I spoke English, you know, everything, like education, like all American, but when it came to cultural things, like I didn't pick up on that until later. Like,
right.
Oh, I think she asked me if I knew, because there were other people in the room too.
Right.
If she singled me out to ask me if I knew how to do nails.
Yeah.
Right. And I am like, okay, well, I think that story can have two sides of argument, right? Well, someone would say, you're being too sensitive. God, like the amount of times that I've been told that when
right.
you go through certain instances, incidents, and people tell you, no, you're just being sensitive. You're reading too much into it. And then other side of it where you're like, no, that was racist, right?
Yeah, no, I get that. Because I will say, I don't know if maybe it's a replicate experience, but I think it's probably similar enough you'll understand what I'm saying. But if you are like straight, cisgender, white, mm-hmm. you will never understand having to defend your existence
mm-hmm.
at work, at dinner, mm-hmm. at holidays. Like it's really, really wild to like literally have people think that you don't belong, insert here, it doesn't matter where,
mm-hmm.
simply because of X factor that you had nothing to do with.
Yeah.
You didn't ask for it, you didn't choose it. And I think that the effort of like a DEI program is to eliminate those types of things
mm-hmm.
and to eliminate sort of the implicit bias that, to be honest, everyone has.
Yes,
and it's something
absolutely.
That I find myself working on a lot. I take public transit almost exclusively.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like driving. I don't like riding in cars. I somehow feel safer on public transit. I don't know why. But it is something that I find myself having to really think about as I'm on public transit, because I will see someone and I will have a thought.
Mm-hmm.
And I will sit there and think, okay, am I having this thought because of this specific person, or am I just seeing what I'm seeing and that's the thought that comes up? And I'm not going to pretend like I don't have to work on implicit bias and that I don't have these thoughts sometimes, because they do creep in, because it's something that, unfortunately, I was raised in a completely white community. And so a lot of these things were instilled in me very, very young. They weren't outright racist things, but they were things rooted in racism that I have since had to go back and realize, okay, this is why I think this or feel
mm-hmm.
this way or whatever.
Yeah.
And what I think is really frustrating from an employment standpoint, a corporate standpoint, whatever it is there are safeguards that exist that some companies will use, like blind resumes, blind applications,
mm-hmm.
where the name, address, all of that is taken off
mm-hmm.
prior to anyone who would have anything to do with hiring them is seen. And
yeah.
I think it's those types of things that would actually be more beneficial to implement for DEI versus like, we need representation.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense? Because I think you need the representation once you get them inside. But I think to seek that out is where then it becomes a kind of a problem, because
yeah.
that's when it inevitably turns into like, well, this person didn't even earn their role because they just needed, you know, representation, or they needed to check a box.
Yeah.
And I don't believe that that truly happens very often. Does it happen? Sure, probably. But I think even more than nine times out of 10, the person earned the job happens to fit something that is needed and whatever. But I think it puts people on the defense of like, well, now I have to prove myself even more because I'm X and X and X and people think I don't belong here. And that, I will say, I have witnessed conversations of like, well, this person's only here for this reason.
Yeah. And I think, you know, hiring plays, or DEI plays a huge role in hiring, right?
Yeah.
And I do think that corporate America, it needs to take a look at how their current hiring practices, and is it conducive to hiring?
Yeah.
And end up having a representation that is more diverse and inclusive. And going back to the story of those two girls separately, right? They asked me those questions, and what they did was rooted in just not understanding, right? Like, I think they were both nice girls.
Sure.
Right? And I think that's where you also kind of think that, oh, if someone makes a racist remark without even realizing that they're making a racist remark, suddenly they become villainized, right?
Right.
And that's just not the case.
Yeah.
Right? Because all of us, as you said, have implicit biases. And I feel like there just also needs to be the safe space of, you know what, ask the questions.
Yeah.
Because I think not talking about it and tiptoeing like around the issue is also not helping it and not helping this progress, right? I think, you know, here, this other incident that I had in college was, and this was just straight up racist.
Yeah.
Like, there was no other way around it. I remember for my business class, you know, we were doing a group project, and I volunteered to do the final edit for the paper that we were handing in. And one of the guys in the group who actually spent a whole semester with me in the same group called me the day before the paper was due. And he said, hey, so where did you say you were born? And I said, Korea, Seoul, Korea. And he goes, oh, do you think your English is proficient enough to edit this paper?
Wow.
And I remember, and mind you, I was double majoring in communications, which I was like, so I was like, I don't even remember what I responded, because it's this moment of, what the fuck do I say to that, right?
Yeah.
And the audacity of, for you to call me the day before to ask me if I'm proficient enough in English to edit this paper, right?
Yeah.
And so I was like, I think I said something along the lines of, I'll be fine, right? And so I hung up, and I remember at the time I remember it clearly because we were preparing for an economics test, right?
Yeah.
And it was with the group of people, and one of them, like, I've done a business project with him like the previous semester, and he also happened to be white. The guy who called me, white male, the guy who I was with, another white male. And I just told them what happened, and he goes, is he serious? Like, you know, and he actually sided with me, and he was the one that was giving me reasons as to why I would be okay to edit this
right.
paper, because he's worked with me in the past, right? And I just, you know, and again, it's not that it is your race or your gender that makes you a villain, right? It's like suddenly like white men
right.
are bad. It's because I had the guy who called me and asked me that question versus the guy who was sitting with me saying, you know, I cannot believe that someone asked you that question,
yeah.
right? And so, again, and I have a hard time believing that this guy suddenly, you know, got a job in corporate America and
it all went away.
Yes.
Yeah. You know, so we're reaching time. So I think we'll do a part two on this. But I just, I think that really the takeaway here is that the DEI efforts can't be separated from like the overall organizational like business objectives. Like they have to just be one and the same, and it has to be a cultural conversation about the company. And I think company culture, a completely different subject. Another thing that I think, to be honest, the more you talk about it, the more you try to like massage it, the worse it gets. Mm-hmm. We'll stop here for now. We'll pick this back up. So join us back next week. We're just gonna just talk about it for a while. So in the meantime, you can follow us on Twitter, Corporate Rehab Pod, Instagram, Corporate Rehab Pod. You can please leave us a rating and review on whatever platform you're listening to us on. Thank you so much. Come back next week and we're going to talk more about DEI.
Thank you.
Thanks, everybody. Bye.